and welcome to Stirring the Pot. I'm Linda Nygaard, and I'll be your host for the next 30 minutes. I'm glad you're here. Each week, I talk with Vashon chefs and cooks and food professionals and home cooks and kids who don't know how to cook, and we find stories and we find ideas. Today, we're going to talk with Emily Wigley of Orca Eats. Hi, Emily.
Hi, Linda.
I'm glad you're here. Welcome to the studio.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Emily has an interesting background, and we're going to talk about that in a minute and how that carried her into a food truck on Vashon. But first, I have a couple of things I'd like to talk to you about. First of all, our lineup is changing the end of this month. As of August 26th, Stirring the Pot will be on Tuesdays at 2 instead of Wednesdays. You'll still be able to stream it. You can still do, you know, like you did. But the live part is changing days and time. And secondly, I'd like to encourage listeners to email me at stirringthepot@voiceofvashon.org. I've gotten some really interesting emails from people who are have some questions, or they might know someone who has some cool things going on in their kitchen, or they have an ethnic cuisine they're curious about, or they know someone who makes wonderful something. And I'm always up for suggestions and questions. So if you would email me, again, that's stirringthepot@voiceofvashon.org. I'll be happy to receive them, and I will answer you. Okay. Now, Emily. Hello.
Yes. Hello. Yeah.
Well, here we are in the dog days of summer, huh?
Indeed. Nice and toasty out there.
Nice and toasty. You were roasting tomatoes early this morning, got it out of the way before the heat hit.
Exactly. Let the oven do the hot thing and then turn it off.
Yeah. And get it off. Yeah. So we're in the, you know, the dog days. People talk about dog days of summer, and I've always thought of that in August. I hope I'm right about that. But I read a poem this morning that's called Dog Days of Summer, and the first two lines just killed me. It was, in the dog days of summer, as muslin curls on its own heat and crickets cry in the black walnut tree.
Oh, that's nice.
Isn't that nice?
Yeah. I like that. Good images.
So, Emily, how did you get here? I know that you came from San Francisco.
I did, a long time ago. But yeah, I was born in San Francisco, raised in the Bay Area, and escaped the happy, crazy California for Washington State for college and moved to Seattle. And then ended up on Vashon in 92.
Good. And so your attraction to food sort of happened accidentally, didn't it?
Kind of accidentally, never really on purpose, but I always, I like to eat. Mm-hmm. And my mom was a really good cook. And I grew up with great food at the table and always being welcome in the kitchen as well to help.
That's important. I think kids learn a
absolutely.
Lot.
Absolutely. Standing on a chair and making cookies or bread or whatever it was, mostly baking things. And then when I was in high school, when I was about 14, I started volunteering of all odd things at a wonderful nonprofit restaurant that all of the profits and all of the tips went to family service in our county.
You're kidding.
No, it was really a remarkable place.
That was really before its time.
Definitely. Yeah. So I waitressed on Saturdays, mostly in the winter, but a little in the summer from about 14 on. And then when I was 16, there was a new chef who came on, was hired to do dinner. And she and I worked something together. I don't remember what. And she, I guess, thought I was an okay kid. And she said, hey, do you need a summer job? I need a chef's assistant. And sure, because at that point I had no idea what I was doing, you know, job-wise.
Did you even know you needed a job?
Yeah, I thought
you
a job did? Would be a good idea.
Yeah.
And it would be good to work. So she brought me on, and I just learned on the go and was incredibly fortunate to be there. So stayed there for 3 or 4 years. And the second year, the woman who had replaced me, who was a grown-up, she had begun making all of the desserts. They had purchased desserts in the past. And she said, no, I can do this. And so my second year, she was leaving so I could go back. And she said, hey, let me teach you how to do all the desserts. So my second year, I was making all the desserts for lunch and dinner, which was a lot of responsibility for, I guess I was 17. But it was... It was doable.
What kinds of desserts did you... That's a
pies
that's
by the
a,
dozens.
Oh, was it?
Yeah,
lots of pies.
I made New York style cheesecake every Friday. Mm-hmm. Monday was lemon meringue pie day, or Friday was. I don't know. We had special days of the week that were things. So I did lemon meringue pie, did lots of fruit pies, chocolate chest pie. I did a really nice walnut torte that was delicious.
Oh, just now I'm hungry.
All the desserts. Yeah. I know.
Well, that's a lot for a 17-year-old girl.
But it was such a gentle place. Mm-hmm. It was really... everything was very feasible.
So
for
your foray into the food world was a gentle awakening.
Absolutely. Plates being thrown into that nonsense.
No yelling in the kitchen.
Very occasionally, if I couldn't find something in the storeroom, I'd get hollered at, but reasonably so.
This year, well, you have a garden, right?
I do. This year I'm growing for the food truck, which is a little daunting and very exciting and wonderful and tasty.
How's it going?
It's going really well. It's a bit of a jungle. I'm completely behind on like tomato pruning and things like that. Mm-hmm. So I'm just I'm not a farmer. I leave that term to those who really do know what they're doing. But the miracle of, you know, seed or small plant into dirt, add water and beautiful sunshine,
and you get
to have food is pretty sweet.
And so the tomatoes you roasted this morning came from
your
garden.
Yeah, those are from my garden. Yeah, and actually the garlic was from my daughter and son-in-law, who are farmers.
That's
so
wonderful.
That was great.
So for our listeners, you were telling me earlier how you roasted them. You didn't put any olive oil on them.
I didn't.
I'm surprised at that.
You know, olive oil is a wonderful thing, but I personally don't need any more fat in my diet. So the flavor is great, but I just thought, let's just let the tomatoes shine. And that's kind of how I tend to cook, sort of. If it's for me, like, what do I need emotionally and physically if I'm cooking for my customers? It's more, you know, sort of like what would really optimize this beautiful fresh whatever it is. So yeah, olive oil's great, but
well, that's really interesting for me, because I always thought that roasting tomatoes, I thought olive oil was intrinsic to the texture of the finished product.
Nope.
But it's not.
I mean, it is, in that there's no oil in them.
Right.
So like
right.
when I went to puree them, you know, there are none of the little beautiful golden dots of oil. But like, I roast almost all my vegetables at home. Again, not on the truck, but at home, I roast almost all my vegetables with nothing, like potatoes.
That's wonderful. Wonderful to know.
It's just, yeah.
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 Well, so then we can fast forward a little bit, and now we're in Vashon.
Yep, we're in Vashon.
And when did you decide that a food truck might be a good idea for Vashon?
Well, I was a professional horsewoman until 2012. I was boarding horses and teaching riding and horsemanship.
Are you still doing horses?
I still do horses, but just for fun and not for clients anymore. And I still love them. And the I was closing that business, and I had a couple of jobs and wasn't really sure what I wanted to do. Kind of was, you know, a little at odds with myself in terms of what was next, and just tried hard to think of, you know, what do I really enjoy? I really enjoy food. What else do I enjoy? Service, hospitality, those kinds of things. And I knew I wanted something where I could turn it off at a certain point. Not that my brain turns off as easily as I wish it did, because that's how most of us self-employeds are. But
I was going to say, for a business owner,
there's
not much turn off
as much
time
as we'd like.
Yeah.
But the truck can turn off, and the kitchen, and the, you know, the propane can be shut down. And so having something where I could choose my days and hours and even my months, because I am only open April through October. So it's that was important to me, to have that nimble, changeable, do whatever I want sort of thing. So,
and you kind of went on a quest to find the right truck.
I did. I drove a few trucks and really looked at trucks hard in the Seattle area, because to me that was a no-brainer, that I'll find a truck right here and be great. It will have passed, you know, state L&I, and maybe even have a health permit and all that good stuff. And everything I looked at was just not quite right for me, for various funny reasons, mostly like they totally didn't work. And I saw a bunch of all things, you know, where do you go when you're looking at things? Even if you're not going to get it there, you might look at, you know, Amazon or eBay. Well, there are not food trucks on Amazon, not quite yet, and but there are on eBay. And there was a fellow in Houston who had a bunch for sale, and he just basically redid trucks and slammed them together and gave them a funky paint job and put them on the market. And so my husband kindly went with me, which is good, because I'm not the mechanical one. And we went to Houston and we looked at a bunch of this guy's trucks, and we chose the big red one, which is now the big black one. So
well, it had something to do, your final decision, with the size of the window, right?
Size of the window
and
I
the
love
height,
and the fact that it's a full-size truck,
right?
There are food trucks out there that are really appropriate for more smaller people than I, and being in the upper end of the 5 foot end, you know, almost 6 feet
tall.
Yeah, you're tall. It's nice to have a little headroom. And also to have the space. I have a 14-foot kitchen in the truck. And so to have the space for all those cooking appliances is really nice. So,
Well, I want to talk about some of the food that you produce in there. But first, I have a logistics question for you. So most of the time, there are three or four people in your truck when you're doing a big event or, you know, something major.
Yep.
How do you choreograph that?
That's a really good question. And to that end, I wish that my wonderful employee and friend, Lori Walters, was here because she is the master of choreography.
Is she?
Yep. Right before every event, she has thought about it really hard. And then there's a moment, like at the end of prep for a big thing, a big catering or a big weekend job or whatever, where I say, what do you think? And she knows exactly what I mean. And she says, I think, you know, we have this, this, and this we need to get on the plate, and we know it needs to go in this order, right? Yeah, that's right. And she just works it out really well. I did an event recently and she was not working that weekend, and I found myself in the position of figuring that out. It went just fine, but but she's really good at it.
Well, and you have a team, and
we
so,
do.
So there's a rhythm that happens.
Yeah, there's a rhythm, and there's always a... when I talk to someone about hiring them to work on the truck, whether it's for one weekend or one event or all summer long, after I talk with them someplace, whether it's, you know, the roastery or picnic table at my place or whatever, then I invite them into the truck. And it's, there are two things happening. One is I want them to see what they're getting into,
right,
potentially. And I want to feel what I'm getting into, if you will. I want to feel comfortable
With that
physically.
Person in your space.
Absolutely.
Because really, it's your space.
I'm in their space. Yeah. They're in my space. Yeah. It's kind of my home, if you will. I mean, I don't sleep in there, but that'd be creepy. But it is my little business. And everybody needs to feel comfortable. And so you just kind of feel the person's physical vibe and make sure that it's a good fit for everybody.
Well,
I
think you've done really well with that because you have happy people working there.
Thank you.
Chopping and cooking and smiling
really
and handing food out.
Yeah, we have very nice people who have worked with us over the years.
Well, let's talk about some of that food.
Okay.
Let's talk about that. You mentioned your summer sauce, and I love the idea of a summer sauce that is versatile.
Very.
You can use it on a lot of things.
Yeah, for sure.
Tell me how you make that.
Well, the summer sauce.
Hold on one second. Sorry. For my listeners, she uses a lot of things from her garden, and parsley is abundant.
It's abundant. Yeah. It is. The Italian flat leaf parsley is kind of hilarious and Jurassic at this point. The leaves on it are huge.
It's but it's so good.
It's so good. It probably needs to be whacked back. But for this, you know, for all intents and purposes, it makes a heck of a sauce. So
summer sauce. So here we go.
Yeah. If you think of anything green, and sometimes we call it green sauce, sometimes we call it herb sauce or summer herb sauce or summer sauce or whatever. If you think of whatever really green leafy herb you can get your hands on, or a green like a spinach, it doesn't have to be an herb, and that's going to be the base. At least that's what we usually do. So lots of times it'll be a lot of Italian parsley and a fair amount of basil, and that's our green base. And then from there, you know, we want it to be liquid, so you have to add something. So in this case, because you do want it, here's the other end of the olive oil topic, I guess. You do want it to bind, whether you're tossing it on pasta or with potatoes to make a gratin, or on a piece of fish. You want it to kind of stay put.
Sure.
And olive oil, you can really emulsify.
So the emulsification happens with the olive oil.
And then you probably want something a little zippy, which, you know, if you watch Food Network or read a lot of food books, you understand about acid. And acid is what gives everything a little more of a spring in its step. So it can be any vinegar you want. It can be a citrus juice. It can be, you know, just anything acidic. Lemon is my go-to. Sort of my second favorite is lime, which, I don't know, this time of year I do go kind of crazy for lime juice. But with the greens, lemons is just really, it's just really, really fitting. If you want it to be kind of extra kicky, maybe you're going to use something a little more acidic, maybe like a red wine vinegar, maybe gentler but still more acidic would be like a rice wine vinegar. You can just, you know, pineapple vinegar.
So if I'm standing in front of my blender or my food processor, I put a handful of parsley and a handful of basil in and process that, and then drip some olive oil I'm happy
until
with the
you're
sauce.
Happy. Exactly. And just keep tasting. And salt. Salt's always your
pepper,
friend.
Yeah.
If you wanted a little extra fiery, maybe throw in either a jalapeno.
A jalapeno. I was thinking about
absolutely.
That.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Or if you're like, I'm not growing anything hot right now, so red pepper flakes are your friend.
Sure.
So a little red chili flake is good. So yeah, and just keep blending it
And it's a very bright sauce.
It's really bright. Yeah.
And it's wonderful on fish.
It's really good. So it holds up really well to anything pretty fatty and pretty strong, like a fish or pork or beef or chicken or every vegetable you've ever met. Or salad, or pasta. I mean, I'll stop now. It doesn't go well with dessert.
Probably not dessert.
No, but everything else.
Yeah, but everything else. I think I really like the way that you describe it too, because, yeah. you know, as you know, there's a trend now for people cooking without recipes.
Definitely.
And I really love that because that's pretty much how I cook. Is I don't really have a recipe.
Yeah.
I may follow one for some guidelines names of some ingredients.
Definitely.
But I kind of go by taste.
Yep.
And I think that's what you do.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I do have recipes that are my guidelines. And
right.
those honestly are more guidelines for shopping than they are for cooking, if that makes
mm-hmm.
sense.
Sure.
Because if you're trying to make sure you have enough to feed, you know, the people that might come to the food truck on Saturday at the farmer's market, we might need to do 70 entrees. So I do have to do the math mm-hmm. and figure that mm-hmm. all out. But when it comes to actually putting it together, no, it should be by feel and by taste.
And by taste.
And I think that's important for a couple reasons, and this might sound a little out there, but one of them is food should be empowering as well as nourishing and delicious. And if you can make food for yourself or for someone you care about, that's what food is to me. It's so corny, but it's so true to say that food is love and food is truly caring and it's an expression.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have a guideline and you go, okay, well, I'm going to make this and it is helpful to know I'm going to want about this much of whatever, but maybe I don't want it to just be salt and pepper and garlic. Maybe
right.
I want a little cumin or, you know, a little hot pepper
mm-hmm.
or both. So you need to be able to riff and just to always keep in mind that it's never a failure because it's always edible, right?
Oh, and you know, as our friend Julia Child said, if you fail, just add more butter.
Exactly.
Just put some more butter in there. It'll be great.
Absolutely. Yes.
Yeah, I like that.
Yes.
And you also do a really wonderful chimichurri, which is on that
it's
same
very
vein.
Much, it's exactly, really exactly the same. The only place it's different is it is what I think of as a little more biting in the acid department.
It's acidy. It's,
and so,
it's stronger.
Yep. So it's full of red wine vinegar because that is more acidic.
Yeah. And what about beef? What are you doing with beef?
What about beef? Okay, well, beef, that's an interesting topic. And you surprised me, and that's fine. So all of the meats that we serve from the truck are mm-hmm. all grown by people that I meet, is the best way to put it. I don't do any factory farmed animals.
Mm-hmm.
So all of our meat, whether it's beef or pork or whatever, is all grown. It's all from Washington State. Lots of it's from just over the mountains, but it's all pasture raised. It's all natural.
It's beautiful. Your food is
good
beautiful.
Stuff. Thank you, Linda. It's important to me to use good quality ingredients because otherwise it's not going to be really very good food, in my opinion.
You were talking about feeling corny, you know, by saying food is love.
Yes.
Well, I often have said that, I've said it over and over, that if we would just cook together and sit at the table together and eat.
Absolutely.
We'd have peace all over the world.
We would.
I really
absolutely.
Believe it.
And I'll bring a fork and you bring the napkins and
And
we'll
I just
eat.
Always feel kind of corny when I say that, but I really believe it.
I do
really
too.
It's really true.
It's corny but good.
And then when we're here on Vashon, we have all of the privilege of our fabulous farmers.
We certainly do.
The purveyors
and
the cattle people and the sheep people. And
everybody.
We're just
and the amazing
so
produce
lucky.
Is so good.
Mm-hmm.
And it is so very, very fresh. I mean, mm-hmm. when I, you know, if I talk to a farmer on Tuesday and say, what do you have? Or some of the farmers send out a fresh sheet and say, this is what I have available for wholesale. You know, just let me know what you want. And I say, okay, like last week we did a case of beets and a case of cabbage. And those, I mean, they were just so beautiful.
Beautiful.
And we get them on Friday when we prep them.
Yeah.
And then we serve them on Saturday and Sunday. That's incredible.
You know, I forgot to introduce somebody else who's sitting here in the studio with us because I just got so busy. Susan McCabe is here as well.
Hello.
And Susan is one of my friends who doesn't cook very much.
I don't cook very much. I'm married to a guy who likes to cook.
He likes to cook.
I raised two sons and cooked for them for, I don't know, 18, 20 years,
mm-hmm.
and I'm done.
Yeah. Good for you.
Yeah.
Just as long as you still eat.
I just want to let everybody know. Susan's sitting here, and we're using her, I guess we are.
We are.
You
I am
ask
your
some
engineer.
Questions if you don't understand what we're talking about.
Well, so far, you haven't.
We haven't been there yet.
It's been befuddled.
It's been real.
Yes.
Good.
Yes.
So far,
understandable.
I'm clear.
Yeah.
Hooray.
I haven't heard yet a real description, though, of everything that Orca Eats serves.
Well, that's what we want to talk about, too, is your menu planning. And how do you decide if you're going to be at Farmer's Market on Saturday?
Yeah.
How do you decide what we're going to eat, what we're going to have?
Well, you know, on the truck in those white letters, it says Orca Eats. And right
mm-hmm.
below it says whatever it wants.
Mm-hmm.
And that does have to do with the fact that the you know, the transient orcas, the non-southern sound resident orcas, as they call the salmon eaters, the rest of the orcas around the world literally do eat whatever they want, primarily marine mammals. And I think penguins maybe, and all kinds of things all around the world. And that kind of harks to what I created when I started the business, when I said I wanted something that was nimble, that I could literally turn off the engine when I was ready and park it and be done with it.
I love that. So that's leaving your work at the office.
And the menu planning is the same thing. What do I feel like? What is fresh? What's available? And so I try really hard to be seasonal, but I also, you know, I'm always reading food media and whatever I can, and listening to interesting podcasts and thinking, well, that sounds great. And well, that sounds really good too, but it's not very practical. Or no, yes. Okay. Well, can I get some fresh tomatoes? Can I get some, like that cabbage last week? I got it from Matsuda Farm, and it was just
so beautiful.
We hard seared it on the flat top, so on the griddle. You could do it in a pan at home, and we laughed when Lori was cooking it when we were at the market on Saturday, and we tease and we flip the exhaust fan on, not only to keep ourselves cool and to keep things safe in the truck when we're cooking, you know, really high heat, but also it sends the smell of whatever we're cooking into the neighborhood.
Okay, so, now I do have a question.
Okay.
You said you hard seared cabbage.
Yep.
So are we talking about sliced cabbage that then looks like a cabbage steak? What is hard searing?
Hard searing means really high heat, a good amount of fat. We were using grapeseed oil, which doesn't mind if it gets really hot. Yeah. It's not going to smoke and burn. And yes, we wedged the cabbage, left the core intact so we could sear it in one piece.
It would stay whole that way.
However, Lori realized that with that piece of core and the whole big piece as one big piece, we don't use knives for our customers. We don't distribute knives.
Right.
They're
not needed.
Exactly. Because usually street food is edible with just a fork or a spoon. Mm-hmm. So she said, oh no. And so we just chopped it and that's the kind of thing you do on a food truck. You realize this is not practical. This doesn't work. Or you change your tune and do something a different way. So it just means it got a little brown and a little wilty. And we chuckled because it started to smell like walking behind a really fun Chinese restaurant. That sweet sort of caramelized
cabbage.
Oh, it sounds delicious.
It was really good. So it was a bed, and you could have salmon with it, and we had roasted beets. It was just, we called it our summer bounty plate because it was just everything fresh and beautiful, and some salad mix. And we did two sauces. One was a basil herb sauce, and the other one was a corn sauce, which is actually just called corn butter, but that name drives me kind of crazy because corn butter sounds like has butter in it, but it doesn't. Sort of like peanut butter is only peanuts.
Oh, yeah.
Corn butter is corn, and it's just pureed corn kernels fresh off the cob. We added a little lemon juice pour it on whatever you feel like.
Really?
Great. It went on the salmon. It went on the vegetables. Yeah.
Corn
butter.
Wow.
That's what it is.
That sounds really good.
It's really simple.
Yeah, if good you stuff. Get good corn.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, and cut it off the ear right away. And
So we were talking about canning earlier, and neither one of us are real canning aficionados, but there's so much bounty out there right now that people are canning. So I just kind of wanted to stress the importance of how to can.
Yes.
Would you like to address that a little bit for
us? Absolutely. Well, I think the first thing I'd say in terms of addressing the importance of food safety, and I don't mean to be all health department-y.
Yeah, but you have a good handle on it with your truck.
Yeah,
you have to have
absolutely.
Really good...
We don't want people to have a tummy ache for sure. And canning is really a serious thing. Mm-hmm. So the first thing I would say is read a little bit about canning. Take a canning class. Mm-hmm. Check out a book from the library, whatever. Can with your mom or your grandma or your auntie or whoever, your friend. And canning is just really important to do correctly, because if one does not can correctly, there's this bad little thing called botulism, and botulism is fatal.
Right.
And it doesn't taste. So if you eat some canned tomato sauce and it wasn't canned properly, it's not a good
thing.
You could die. And we don't want to talk about
that.
That's pretty scary.
It's kind of scary. Yeah.
Yeah,
so,
it is.
You know, you just need to do it right. So you use the water bath, which just means that you've sterilized your jars. You put your food in the jars and then you dip them in the boiling water and you put the lid on, the little poppy lid, the flat part. And then it I don't even know off the top of my head, because if I ever do can, which is very rare, I make sure I have all the all the facts in front
and
of
certain,
me.
Certain things take longer in the water bath than other things, and you know,
you probably know more than I do, Linda.
I do like, I love the product.
Oh,
it's
absolutely.
Just really a lot of hard work.
It is. It really
is.
It's really gratifying. People who can seem to just love
and their
to
pantries
do it.
Are beautiful.
Absolutely. And what a special thing to have, you know, summer bounty and peaches and tomatoes in January or something or for Christmas.
What are you using out of your garden right now besides tomatoes?
Tomatoes and parsley, kohlrabi. What else is coming in? We're about to hit melons, which is very exciting.
That's very
exciting. Yeah, so we have some honeydews and some blacktail watermelons. Mm-hmm. And I think that's all the melons. And then there will be some winter squash later. But so right now it's tomatoes and kohlrabi and parsley.
You know, kohlrabi. I love kohlrabi. And we ate it when we were kids, and my mom grew it, and we used to just slice it and put butter and salt and pepper on it and eat it like a slice of an apple.
Absolutely.
Oh, it was so good.
Do you
cook with it?
I either cook with it or use it raw.
In salads.
I just love it in a slaw.
Yeah, it's really good in a slaw.
It is. Yeah.
It's a funny looking vegetable.
It is. It looks
and people
like an alien.
Look at it and think, I don't think so.
Right.
But if you peel... You just have to peel it
Absolutely.
And slice it.
Yeah.
It's
so friendly.
Radish family?
No, it's in the brassica family. Oh, so it's related to broccoli and those things.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's wonderful. Well, what's on the menu today? What are you thinking about today?
The biggest thing I'm thinking about is blackberries because
you drive down
the road and turn your windows down and you can smell the blackberries. So I'm doing a blackberry, it's called a jammy bar, but I think I'll have a better name. Like blackberry invasion or something crazy. But it's
blackberry love.
Yes, there you go. It's basically an oat and butter and flour crust.
Mm-hmm.
And then you just lay down raw blackberries and then you crumble the same thing that was the crust on top and bake it. So it turns into a crust and a streusel sort of thing.
Yum.
And it's a big, a big fruit bar.
Blackberries.
Yeah.
I love that. I made a couple years ago, and I'm going to make it again, a duck breast with a blackberry sauce.
That
blackberry
thyme
was
Absolutely.
Really, really good.
Absolutely.
You know, one thing we didn't talk about was the chocolate pudding and the ginger ale. I was thinking about your ginger ale because it's so hot outside, and I would really love some right now.
Super refreshing.
So how do you make that?
So a simple syrup is sugar and water that's just cooked until it's clear. So you're just going to do, and I do 2-to-1 sugar to water. And then while
two cups of sugar and a cup of water.
Exactly. And while that is turning into syrup, a quick peel a big piece of ginger, like a full piece, and then throw it in the food processor, or you can chop it by hand. As soon as the simple syrup is clear, put the chopped ginger in there, turn off the heat, and let it steep for 5 to 20 minutes. Strain out the ginger chunks, and you have ginger syrup, which then you're just going to mix with
in your soda water
or any kind of soda water, and you have a ginger ale.
So that is really good for me because I have a soda stream at home.
Perfect.
And
I
love ginger ale
all over the place.
Yeah. And so for your listeners, for my listeners, our listeners, sorry.
All the listeners.
My tang is all tangled today. we're going to have these recipes online for you.
Great.
And you're kind of famous for your chocolate pudding.
Oh, that's nice. Chocolate pudding maybe is famous for itself. It's
well, it is.
Pretty darn
you know,
delicious.
It's such a comfort. It's such a comfort, silky, wonderful thing. But you've got a really good recipe for it.
Yeah,
and so
it's good stuff.
We will put that online as
I'm
well.
I'm glad to share that.
Is that a recipe that came from family or didn't?
It was my mom's. I always think of it as her recipe, but it was in a cookbook. It's a very, very old Betty Crocker cookbook.
Okay. So, you know, Betty Crocker saves our lives sometimes.
Indeed.
She really does. I was talking about her last week and there's just so much that she taught me.
An awful lot of
way
information.
Way back when.
Absolutely. Yep.
And I still occasionally go there and look and say, well, what's she thinking about this kind of thing? I find now that it's very outdated and the ingredients are different,
for
sure. But there's a lot of methodology that still works.
Truly.
So,
Well,
we are just nearly out of time here and I didn't get to all my questions. I have more questions for you, but maybe you'll come back.
If you'd like me to, I would do that.
Come back.
Thank you.
Thank you everybody for listening. And, I think I'll see you next week. What do they say? If God willing,
and the creek
don't rise. Yeah. I'll see you next week.
Sounds good.